It's Easter. It's time for vacation and time for family gatherings and time for family dinners and time for celebrations, time for egg hunts, time for new clothes, time for Easter lilies, time for bright flowers, time for trees to leaf out. And depending on how strict you were with your Lenten things, you might be time for you to go back to some of your former habits or the things you gave up for Lent, or maybe to start doing things that you, things you gave up or to start doing things that you had stopped doing. But then I wonder, after all this is over, after it's all said and done, is this season going to make any difference in my life? How am I going to act differently in my finances, in my spiritual life, in my emotional life, in my relationships, or in the things I choose to do or not do? In many ways, it works very much like we have the celebration and then we go on and we are so bombarded that sometimes it's difficult to have that really make an impression and make a difference on us, unless we, I think, do something intentionally about it. I think the Easter story is probably very familiar to most of us, and we all have something, I think, that you think of. What's the first thing you think of when you think about the morning at the tomb? Used to be I always thought about Peter and John running and racing and who won. It used to be that I thought about the Roman guards being there and telling the lies that the chief priests told them to say, that Jesus, the disciples, stole the body. But the one that stuck with me to this time when I realized I was preaching today was, who is going to roll away the stone? And I can identify with that because there's lots of times when I think about wanting to do something, but I'm like, I would do that except that I don't think I can do this part. So I really identified with that. And then if you were listening when Carl was reading, this text doesn't even have that part in here. And I'm going, shoot, that's just terrible. But I couldn't get it out of my head. And so I want to kind of think about that and not think about it at the same time. How many of you have ever heard of the El Camino de Santiago? Thank you. What's it called? Did I say it correctly? Is it about a 500-mile trip? 700-mile trip. The other day I was listening to the Today Show, and there were two men on there, and they had just, about 2 years ago, completed this pilgrimage. It's called El Camino Santiago, right? Anyway, it's a pilgrimage in northern Spain that has become quite popular. It's one that could take as much as six weeks. You travel anywhere from 10 to 20 miles a day. My sister-in-law, Milton's sister, is going to do that, so I know a little bit more about that part. The idea is that you carry whatever you need with you. There are little hotel inns or something you can stay at. But many people that have done it talk about how the disconnect from the daily technology, the daily course of things, really gets them in touch with God. These two men were on the Today Show, and they were talking about how meaningful it was. And I thought, well, that's good. And then I realized that one of them was in an lightweight aluminum wheelchair. When he was young, he had been diagnosed with a muscular disease very similar to ALS. Not ALS, but very similar to that, where his muscles would not do what he wanted them to do, but he could feel everything. So he was watching, he went ahead, this was when he was young, but he went ahead and did all the things he could do, got married, had children, and had a best friend, a best friend. And the best friend just helped him do all the things they wanted to do. After he could no longer use his hands even, he was watching a travel show on TV and saw this pilgrimage advertised. And he said, I want to do that. And he said to his friend, I want to do that pilgrimage. And his friend, without batting an eye, said, I will push you. I will push you. They showed clips of these two going on that pilgrimage. And there are steep rocks to climb. There's water to go through. All those things. But he said, I will push you. And he did. But what you didn't believe was how other pilgrims along the way would join in and help get him through things. But the thing that really stuck in my mind was Justin, I think, in the wheelchair said, don't be afraid to step out in faith, because you would be surprised what could happen. And that's really part of what the Easter story is about. Don't be afraid. The angel said to the women, don't be afraid, step out in faith. Anyway, when I look at Matthew's account, it doesn't talk about the stone being rolled away. But once again, I want to remind us that this story is written to tell the salvation story to those who would be keenly aware of the Jewish practices and laws. And some of the things that happen in this story are strictly in the face of those laws. It's hard for us to imagine what it would be like to live there, because we don't have those laws and we can dismiss them quite easily. Well, I should say I can. Doesn't mean much to me because I wasn't part of it. But I'd like for you to think a little bit about some of the traditions or the sacred things in your family, because it gives you a little hint of that. I haven't cleared this with Milton, but I don't think he'll mind. Oh, dear. Last weekend, we were visiting his family in Harrisonburg. And the Jansen family has a tradition of playing table games. And table games it was. We played dominoes, Mexican train. And so we were doing things, and his mother, Lila May, said, can't do that. That's not the rules. So we had a discussion about rules, and Lila May informed us that Leo, one of her other son-in-laws, when he plays, he wants to play according to their rules. And she said, when you're at my house, it's Jansen rules. There are sacred things. Now, I did think about something for the Stutzman family. I couldn't think of too much, but I know we have our rules, too. This morning, on the way to church, we were talking about there's a radiator leak in the van that I like to drive, which was my mother's before I got it. And he said that Milton was telling me that the hose was wrapped with some tape. I wonder why anybody would fix it that way. And I said, I can tell you one thing. If it was leaking when my mother drove it, it would not have been taped. It would have been fixed properly, because that was important to my mother. If you're going to fix a car, you fix it properly. So we all have our own sacred things. That's to do my own family. Yeah. Anyway, it is interesting how living with housemates or being married makes those sacred things come right to life real quickly. But anyway, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary, they had been at the cross when Jesus died. The text a little earlier says they sat across from the tomb when Joseph of Arimathea put Jesus' body in there, and he rolled the stone, and that it was sealed. It's interesting that in Matthew, remember the woman with the alabaster jar of oil? She already anointed Jesus for burial. So these women, Matthew doesn't need to tell me that these women are coming to anoint the body, because it's already been anointed. These women are just coming to the tomb, and I think they're coming to remember. For those of you that have visited grave sites or visited places that were sacred to you and somebody that has gone on, you can understand how visiting that tomb for them was not because they expected Jesus to rise again. I think they went just to remember and just to wish that things would be the way they used to be. There are before and after events in our lives. This is what keeps me from speeding too much, because I think if I have an accident, I will not remember. Well, no. If I'm late to this event, I will not remember that I was late 10 years from now. But if I have an accident, I will always remember that I was trying to not be late. I call them before and afters. And I think that probably these women wish so much they could erase the past 3 days and go back to the way things used to be. It's a normal thing for us. It's a natural thing. We miss people have gone on before. Even when we know that they are in heaven, we still miss them and we still grieve because we don't know any better. We are human. The two women were at the tomb. I talked about Jewish traditions. In Deuteronomy, we find out that before anything is a legal process, it must be witnessed by two people. We have two women. The only problem is Jewish people only used men as witnesses. So Jesus is expanding this whole thing already by having it be women that come to the tomb. And I just happen to like that. Not anything because I'm a woman, just happen to like it. If I had been one of those women and I came to the tomb, I would have been pretty shaken just coming to where Jesus was buried. But the gospel records that there was an earthquake. Now, that would be pretty devastating to me. And then not only that, there was an angel sitting there. And that angel, they said, looked like lightning and had some white raiment. They call it raiment. So I imagine something iridescent. Scary, in my book, scary. Earthquake alone would do it to me. I just think it's significant. There's an earthquake when they get there that rolls the tomb stone away or if the angel rolled away. It says the angel rolled it away. But remember when Jesus died, there was an earthquake. It brings the two together. There is Jesus' death and Jesus' resurrection. The women were frightened. But what does the angel tell them? Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. I think we all have our own fears, and they probably are driven by things like, how am I going to have enough money? How am I going to get along with that person? How am I going to mend that relationship? How am I going to do in school? I'm not there anymore. Thank you. This is where our academic side sits. My hat's off to you. How am I going to get a job that supports my family? How am I going to survive this health crisis? How am I going to survive the crisis of my family members? We worry about those things, and that fear keeps us afraid more than we wish, much more than we wish. I like to do the celebrity ciphers in the paper. Anybody else do those? That's a good thing. The one I did Saturday, this is what it was. It was a quote by Dennis Hopper, and he says, in a world where the dead have returned to life, the word trouble loses much of its meaning. I think God had me do that one for the sermon. I don't know. I would further add that in a world which God raised Jesus from the dead, I need not be afraid that God's power is insufficient for my needs, because that same resurrection power is available to each of us. We need not be afraid. The angel told them, don't be afraid, and the stone was already rolled away. And in that same way, God is available to roll away the stones in our lives that keep us afraid and troubled. The second thing I would notice in this passage is that the angel says, come and see. Come and see. I think that's an invitation for us to, he says, come and see because the tomb is empty. An invitation for us to come and spend time with the resurrection power. An invitation for us to spend time with Jesus. That's part of how we get rid of our fears, is to spend time with Jesus. Because the tomb was empty. Now, I don't know if you've ever had somebody ask somebody, look at this, and they look at it, and they go, so? No? And I'm, no, look at this. It's because they don't have the background you do. They don't know what you want them to look for. And I know this happened not very long ago. Just this past week, Milton was telling me something to look at. I looked at it, and I'm looking at it. He said, see it? And I'm going, I don't see it. And finally, and we tried to remember, we realized that it was a sports term. I was totally out of it. I had no idea what that term meant. And he said, he read it, and I said, I can read that. And he said, I don't know what it means. Oh, that's what it means. We need to come and see so we know what we're talking about when we do the gospel message. We need to come and see. We need to spend time. The invitation to come and see requires total immersion of ourselves in the good news of God's kingdom. When I come and see, I have personally experienced the resurrection power, resulting in my intentional following of Jesus. And that's very much like Riley said today. I want to follow Jesus. I want to follow Jesus. The stones I see blocking the way to discipleship have already been rolled away, so we don't need to do that. We don't need to worry about that. Now, the last part of it is go and tell. And I don't know how to do this any better than to tell you this little story I read. And this was happening at a first-year student in a Catholic seminary, was told by the dean that he should plan to preach the sermon in chapel the following day. Well, he had never preached a sermon before, and he was nervous, and he stayed up all night. But in the morning, he didn't have a sermon. So he stood in the pulpit, looked at his classmates, and said, "Do you know what I'm going to say?" And they shook their heads, and he said, "Neither do I. The service has ended. Go in peace." Well, you can imagine the dean was not happy. So the dean said, "I'll give you another try tomorrow. And you'd better have a sermon." So again, he stayed up all night, and again, he couldn't come up with a sermon. So the next morning, he stood in the pulpit and asked, "Do you know what I'm going to say?" And the students all said, "Yes." "Then there's no reason to tell you. The service has ended. Go in peace." Now the dean was very angry. "I'll give you one more chance. If you don't have a sermon tomorrow, you will be asked to leave the seminary." Well, again, no sermon. He stood in the pulpit the next day and asked, "Do you know what I'm going to say?" Half of the students said yes, and half of the students said no. The student then announced, "Those who know, tell those who don't know. The service has ended. Go in peace." The seminary dean walked over to the student, put his arm over the student's shoulders, and said, "Those who know, tell those who don't know. Today, the gospel has been proclaimed." The women were the ones who knew, and they were the ones, and they told the ones who didn't know, the disciples. The women were the first missionary preachers. I think that's pretty cool. I suspect that they didn't need a lot of coaching, because I suspect they were very excited and anxious to share the good news. Just like we are there sometimes, but how does that change for us? Because something happens, and then we don't quite have the oomph, or we don't have the joy, or we have other things come in. I think maybe we can say that fear keeps us from telling the good news, because of fear of all those things I mentioned before, fear of relationships, of finances, all those things keep us preoccupied from our focus telling the good news. When you came in this morning, you were invited to take a stone. I invite you to take this stone or this rock with you as a reminder that in the same way that the angel had already rolled the stone away that blocked the tomb, God is ahead of us, rolling stones away as we step out in faith. God's power had raised Jesus from the dead, and that same God, that same power is available to roll away the stones of our fears and trouble. Resurrection power is awesome and trustworthy. And in honor of Louie, where are you, Louie? There. Resurrection power is rock and roll. Let's pray. All-powerful God, thank you for raising Jesus from the dead. Teach us to trust your power as we tell the Easter good news. Amen.